Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Preshvabhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. This morning we're reading chapter 2, text 15, page 109, this edition. Let's do the synonyms first. Yat, which, anudhyam, remembrance, asinam, sword, yuktaha, being equipped with, karma, reactionary work, granti, not, nibbanam, internet. That's not internet. Internet. Chindanti. Cut. Kovida. Intelligent. Dasya. His. Kaham. Who. Na. Not. Kuryat. Shall do. Kata. Messages. Ratim. Attention. Yadanudyasina yukta.
Yadanudyasina yukta.
Karma granti nibandhanam.
Karma granti nibandhanam.
Chindanti kovidastasya.
Chindanti kovidastasya.
Kona kuryat kataritim.
Kona kuryat kataritim.
Yadanudyasina yukta. Karma granti nibandhanam.
Karma granti nibandhanam.
Chindanti kovidastasya.
Chindanti kovidastasya.
Ko na kuryat kataritim.
Ko na kuryat kataritim.
Yadanudasino yukta.
Yadanudasino yukta.
Karma granti nibandhanam. Chindanti kovidastasya.
Chindanti kovidastasya.
Ko na kuryat kataritim.
Ko na kuryat kataritim.
Please chant. Yadanudyasina yukta. Karma granti nibandhanam. Chindanti kovidastasya. Na kuryat kataritim. Yadanudyasina yukta. Karma granti nibandhanam. Chindanti kovidastasya. Kona kuryat kataritim. Yadanudyasina yukta. Karma granti nibandhanam. Chindanti kovidastasya. Kona kuryat kataritim. Yadanudyasina yukta. Karma granti nibandhanam. Kurganti kovidastasya. Kona kuryat kataritim. Anyone else? yadanudyasina yuktaha karma granti nibandhanam chandanti kovidastasya unakuryat kataratim. Translation: with sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? Please repeat. With sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? Srila Prabhupada's purport.
The contact of the spiritual spark with material elements creates a knot which must be cut if one wants to be liberated from the actions and reactions of fruitive work. Liberation means freedom from a cycle of reactionary work. This liberation automatically follows for one who constantly remembers the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead. This is because all the activities of the Supreme Lord, His Leela, are transcendental to the modes of the material energy.
They are all attractive spiritual activities, and therefore constant association with the spiritual activities of the Supreme Lord gradually spiritualizes the conditioned soul and ultimately severs the knot of material bondage. Liberation from material bondage is therefore a byproduct of devotional service. Attainment of spiritual knowledge is not sufficient to ensure liberation. Such knowledge must be overcoated with devotional service so that ultimately the devotional service alone predominates. Then liberation is made possible. Even the reactionary work of the fruitive worker can lead one to liberation when it is overcoated with devotional service.
Karma overcoated with devotional service is called karma yoga. Similarly, empirical knowledge overcoated with devotional service is called jnana yoga. Pure bhakti yoga is independent of such karma and jnana because it alone cannot endow one with liberation from conditional life, but also award one transcendental loving service to the Lord. Therefore, any sensible man who is above the average man with a poor fund of knowledge must constantly remember the personality of Godhead by hearing about him, by glorifying him, by remembering him, and by worshiping him always without cessation.
That is the perfect way of devotional service. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, who were authorized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach the Bhakti cult, rigidly followed this rule and made immense literatures of transcendental science for our benefit. They have chalked out ways for all classes of men in terms of the different castes and orders of life in persons of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam and similar other authoritative scriptures.
Yadanadyusina yukta karma granti nibandhanam chindanti kovidastasya kona kuryat kataratim. With sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his messages? You remember on Friday, Sesha Prabhu spoke about two verses, one about how regardless of one's occupational duty, the perfection is remembering Krishna. And then the previous verse to this, it says, therefore, with one pointed attention, one should always hear about and glorify Krishna. So this verse asks a rhetorical question. What is a rhetorical question? Go ahead, Andrea. Yeah, right. Right, like who wouldn't want it? Like, duh. Right, you know. So the rhetorical question is not really a question at all. It's an it's a statement of exclamation. So here the rhetorical question: Who will not pay attention? Since hearing about Krishna relieves one of the knots of reactionary work, who wouldn't want to do it? Of course, the answer is just about everybody in Kali Yuga, but that's another matter. Has anyone heard of the Gordian knot? Anyone can tell us what is a Gordian knot? So this was a knot which was so complex and so tightly bound that it was said, I believe it was somewhere in the Middle East, like Turkey or something, it said anyone who could undo this knot would conquer Asia. This was the myth. This was the legend. So when Alexander the Great came through with his armies to this part of the world, he heard the legend. He went to see this knot, and he examined it, and then he took out his sword and cut it. So this was the gateway to his conquest of Asia. So when we read about the knot, the binding knot to the reactionary work, the first sentence in the purport, Prabhupada says that when the spiritual spark comes in touch with material energy, there is a knot which is created. Okay, and this entanglement is very difficult to undo. This is described in more detail when Lord Rishabhdev, in the fifth canto, is speaking to his sons. He says that Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhava Metam. Pumsa means what? Or specifically a man, male. Striya means woman, yes. So Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhavam Etam. When man and woman become attached to each other, there is a tremendous knot which is then culminated. Toropi, let's see, Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhavam Etam, Toropi. Then this word knot is used. I forget the line in Sanskrit. Anyone remember that? Hridaya Granthi. That's it. Hridaya Granthi. Yeah. So Granthi, the knot in the heart. And then from that come all of these implications. First of all, you need an apartment or a house, a place for your activities. Kshetra. And then from the activities in the household ashram, sutapta, then come children. And then retire, money. You have to have money to maintain the whole show. In this way, Rishabhdev says, janasya mohoyam aham mameti. One's moha is increased. What is moha? Illusion, yeah. One's illusion. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. And one thinks in terms of aham, which is me, and ameti, mine. So for many children, this is the first word that they learn, mine. You know, the first concept, even sometimes before mama, papa, mine. Especially if they have siblings. So, aham ameti. This is the process of material entanglement. It's described that Maya has two potencies. The throwing potency, that is the power to fulfill our desire to be separate from Krishna and throw us in the material world, and then the covering potency. This, what is it? Bhairanga Shakti, I believe it's called. It's covering, this ability to make us convinced that this is where we want to be. See, obviously these two things have to be there. If the soul desires to be away from its spiritual nature, then there needs to be a process to remove and then a process to fulfill that desire. Really, it's not a punishment. It is just fulfillment of our desire for something which is untrue. See? So, the knot in the heart is so hard to undo. Because we're not exactly honest about what it is that we want. See, the more honest we are in terms of saying, of recognizing our mistake, recognizing that it did not do us well to get away from our spiritual nature, then the easier this knot is to relax and undo. You know, we sit around this room, we're of different ages, so we are thinking in our external vision. There's some young people, there's some old people, there's some men, there's some women. But in fact, we're all these eternal souls. No one's really older or younger. We're just occupying older or younger machines of this gender or that gender. And if we could come back 100 years from now, we'd all be in some other bodies, some other situation. 100 years ago, we were all in some other situation. So, you know, we're just all eternal souls bouncing around this world, one body to the next, and taking our attachments with us from one body to the next. Like in the Gita, Krishna says, just as the wind carries aromas in the 15th chapter. You know, the aroma on the wind is very subtle. Sometimes you smell Krispy Kreme, right? You walk out of the temple and there, glazed donuts. And although it's a block away, immediately our consciousness is full of Krispy Kreme. Or if we are so fortunate to be smelling the offering which is going to be offered to Krishna, we walk by the kitchen and we go, oh, Krishna is going to enjoy this so much, right? So the effect of aromas is very strong on the consciousness. This is my point. So in the same way, the whiff of our desires for material enjoyment is so strong that it creates our next body. It permeates our consciousness so much that we get this body as a result of it. So the body we have right now, if you want to see your karma, just look in the mirror. This was what you wanted, and this is what you got. And the younger it is, the younger that your karma in this particular body is, the harder it is to recognize the foolishness of wanting to enjoy materially. The older we get, by the great mercy of Krishna, the more ridiculous it becomes. You know, I mean, just people are making big careers. The main employment, it seems, in America these days is just taking care of aging bodies. And, you know, the average person spends $250,000 in the last 6 months of their life on medical care. That's the average in America. You know, so that's pretty much what, if you work hard your whole life in some, you know, respectable occupation, just decent occupation, if you're fortunate, you'd be able to have $250,000 when you retire. And then all of that is gone just trying to sustain this unsustainable body. So what kind of a fool's errand is that? You know, you get old, you lose everything, your body parts stop working. So this is the great mercy of Krishna, that even though this Maya's covering is very hard, we are forced to cut this knot. We're forced to cut the knot. But we're so stupid that in spite of all the suffering and pointlessness of life, we still hang on to these material desires. There is a story about the minister saying to the king that the king was saying, well, I can't wait until I'm older than I can be free of this sex desire. And the minister says, Your Highness, Your Majesty, sex desire will stay with you to the last moment of your life. The king did not believe him. So sometime later, the minister came to see him. Please come with me. I need to show you something. So he brought the king with him. Oh, and he said, and please bring your daughter. So the king brought his beautiful young daughter, the princess. And together they went to a poor section of town, some nondescript house, and entered. And when they entered, the king saw there was an old man lying there on his deathbed. Oh. And the king walked in the room, and the man was so wasted, he didn't do anything. Oh. But then the princess entered the room, and the man goes. So then the king could understand the minister was correct. that in spite of so much experience of suffering that you gain as you age, still those desires are so deeply entangled in our hearts that we don't want to let them go. And so we just carry them on to the next body. See? So Krishna consciousness means being very honest and saying, I have made a mistake, and now I want to correct my mistake. Okay? It's not surprising that we would make a mistake. Anyone who has a material body is guilty, just like in the prison. Everyone's wearing the orange jumpsuits, right? And they may be saying, oh, I'm in here, it's unfair, I'm innocent. Everyone is saying that, right? But 99% of the cases, they are guilty as charged. So in our case, 100% of the time, we are guilty. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a material body. So my point is that if we approach spiritual life, and a great deal of Srimad Bhagavatam is about this, in the first canto. Remember the second verse Brajavasi Prabhu was citing the other day? The second verse of the first canto. Anyone remember? Dharma projita kaita vo chaparamo nir matsaranam satam. The first verse just glorifies Krishna. And then the second verse says, Dharma projita kaita vo. This completely abandoning all kinds of cheating religion. The Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of everybody. So, right from the beginning, there's a distinction made between cheating religion and reality. So, cheating religion is that which allows, obviously, a person to keep those knots and not really have to cut them, not have to deal with it, and feel very pious. So, this is why in this second chapter, when Sutta is answering the questions of the sages, we read a great deal on this subject. Remember a few verses back, what's it, Thursday's verse? The verse that Prabhupada cited is the most important in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is. That was text. Text 11, I believe, right? No, sorry, text 9 and 10, yeah. Text 9. Dharmasya hyapa vargasya. Dharma should never be performed for material gain. And if in the course of executing your dharma you happen to get money, don't use it for sense gratification. Okay? So important. Otherwise it becomes cheating religion. It becomes religion which is performed just to get some material benefit. So in America and modern society, you know, the whole idea of karma is only very vaguely understood at best. The sense of it exists in that people feel if you are religious, if you are good, if you do your dharma, then you will get money. And if you don't have money, it means you're not good, you're not working hard, you're not religious. So this is a kind of karma sense of spirituality or religion. In its really refined state, karma means making sacrifices to the demigods. And these sacrifices are done exclusively for material enjoyment. You know, this is Kaitava Dharma also. This is a cheating religion. It's done just for the sake of getting some kind of benefit. There's a long list in the, I believe in the second canto, about if you want this kind of benefit, worship this demigod. If you want that kind of benefit, worship that demigod. You know, if you want a strong body, this one. If you want a nice wife, that one. If you want money, this one. So the process of just making sacrifice, just like we do in Krishna house, we cook, we make an offering to the deity. Okay, so this is done to the demigods. Arti is offered, right? The certain scriptures are read, glorifying them, all for the purpose of now I want to get my money. Okay, now I want to get my benefit. I have to quote my favorite contemporary Vaishnava poet, Akendra Das. Om, give me this, om, give me that. And the other thing, too, while you're at it, deliver it overnight if you please. I'm doing my bit here on my knees. Yes, it's very helpful to know these Akendra shlokas. So, this is karma. karma yoga in its gross and subtle forms, just done for the sake of material gain. On the other hand, Prabhupada writes about karma yoga overcoated with devotional service, a very interesting verb, overcoated. So what does that mean? Obviously, there is a supplementary layer to one's sacrifice. Overcoated with devotional service means sacrifice done for Krishna. That's all. When child Krishna saw his father preparing the sacrifice for Indra, he asked him, what's going on? Is this a ceremony or just a popular custom? He said, no, we're preparing a sacrifice for Indra. Indra sends us the rains. Without rains, we would not be able to eat and survive. And Krishna says, well, but Father, rains fall everywhere, even in the desert or in the ocean where they don't do any good. So what is the point in worshiping Indra? He's just a figurehead. You know, the rain comes automatically because of our work. He gives us one argument. So if we don't work, Indra's useless. And then he gives other arguments as well. So all for the purpose of convincing his father to do what? To worship Govardhan Hill, right? He tells him the real source of our prosperity is Govardhan Hill. That's where we get the cows get their grass, and it's where we get our minerals and our water. So Govardhan should be worshipped. And then later he reveals, actually, I am Govardhan Hill. But the point is that devotional service performed for the pleasure of Krishna appears to be karma yoga superficially, but it's not at all, because we are really interested in pleasing Krishna. Our devotee is interested in pleasing Krishna. This is very pertinent to our lives as devotees. We all have experienced the pleasure of simply serving Krishna. It's amazing, isn't it? Even students sometimes serving Krishna lunch, they just come and do it because they enjoy it so much. They're not getting paid. They're not getting social recognition. They're not getting community service hours. They're not getting Bright Future scholarship points. You know, they're doing it because they just have a good time doing it. It's just fun. And that's because devotional service is the natural activity of the soul. As Bob Dylan said, you got to serve somebody. So this is a service that is done selflessly, but not just for some mundane purpose, but for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Knowingly or unknowingly, it brings one pleasure. So this is karma yoga, selfless work, overcoated with devotional service. When you study Nectar of Devotion next semester, you'll learn this verse, Anya Vilasita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyana Anavrita Anukulena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Rutama, from Rupa Goswami's writing, that devotional service should be performed without the slightest inclination for material gain, for karma, or jnana, just for the point of getting knowledge. That's called pure devotional service. So let's look at the other side of this verse. Gyan, Prabhupada, or the purport rather, Prabhupada writes about knowledge. Liberation from material bondage is therefore a byproduct of devotional service. So when people are very intelligent, they recognize the foolishness of pursuing material gain. And just by strength of their intelligence, they can say, okay, I want to act on a higher platform than this. In American history, we had the transcendentalists of the late 1800s, Thoreau, Whitman, Emerson, and they said that they had this realization that the ordinary course of material life is just a waste of time. And really, life should be lived in such a way that one becomes detached, not more and more attached to things. So this is called jnana. It is knowledge. The Buddhists also have this the Fourfold Noble Truth Buddhism. Life is suffering. That's the first truth. And the second is the cause of suffering is desire. And the third is if you end desire, you end suffering. And the fourth is the Eightfold Noble Path for ending desire. So this is the essence of Buddha's teachings. So this is jnana, because there's no relationship, there's no bhakti involved in any of that. It's more or less saying, if you know and you use your intelligence sufficiently, you can cut your entanglement with material life. It's particularly popular in the West is Zen Buddhism. And Zen teaches you just concentrate on being in the moment. It doesn't matter what you do, what you're eating, what you're doing, just be in the moment. See? So it's very popular. No regular principles, just be in the moment of your sense gratification. And this way, you progressively become detached. So, again, knowledge without devotion, or jnana yoga, is inadequate. The purpose is not liberation. The purpose is pleasing Krishna. And if you please Krishna, liberation comes throwing yourself at your feet, saying, please take me, take me. For the bhakta, there's liberation is just automatically accomplished. So, wisdom means to understand the purpose of knowledge. Like, just like mindlessly acquiring knowledge for some unstated future purpose is not wisdom. Just packing in things in our brain for no reason is not wisdom. Wisdom means having a progressive, organized, and meaningful set of steps in your life in front of you. First I want to do this, then I will do that, and then I will do this. And I will prepare myself for these steps by acquiring this information that I need now. So, in other words, as Stephen Covey in his famous book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, writes, one of those habits is to begin with the end in mind. So you start an endeavor knowing I want to end up in this position. And this is very natural for a human being, because if you think about where you want to be, what happens? You get adrenaline, you get excitement, you get purpose. You want to get up in the morning because I really want to end up in this situation. See? That gives you motivation. So without that, life is just drudgery. And it is a series of meaningless exercises. So we need to know where we're heading. And this is wisdom. You don't get wisdom by just acquiring knowledge. You get wisdom by introspection, by examining your heart. What is it that really turns you on? What is it that really excites you? What is it that, if you just had that one thing and nothing else in life, would make it all worthwhile anyway? See? That is a question that only you can answer. There's this spooky novel, 1984. Has anyone read that? So in 1984, the hero is captured by the totalitarian government, and he's threatened with being taken to room 101. So, and all the other prisoners, no, not room 101. And the prisoners, what's in room 101? Oh, everybody knows what's in room 101. And what's in room 101 is the thing that scares you the most. So it's different for every individual. In his case, it was rats. But that's the negative sense. The same is actually true in a positive sense, because we are all individuals. Okay. So what it is that excites you and motivates you will not necessarily be the same thing that excites and motivates somebody else. But whatever it is, as we learned from this purport, if it is overcoated with devotional service, in other words, I want to do this for Krishna so much. In the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says that one should learn to shed tears for Krishna, for wanting to do, I want so much to do this service for Krishna, that one can actually shed tears. It's called ashavanta. Means developing such an intense desire to want to do some specific thing for Krishna. So this is wisdom. to have a desire to serve Krishna in some particular way so strongly that one can feel it, that it permeates one's heart. This is what it means to be free of karma and jnana. It's fine to want to make money. It's necessary for most men, particularly. You want to make money for Krishna. So that's fine. That's fine. Just do it for Krishna. It's fine to acquire knowledge. Scriptural knowledge is best because it's automatically transcendental. But other kinds of knowledge can be used for Krishna service. It's fine if it's used for Krishna service. So this is the point of this purport. And how is all of this made possible? The verse and the purport are emphasizing this one method. What is that method? Remembrance of Krishna. Right. Now there's 9 methods of devotional service. The first one is hearing. The second one is chanting. And then the third one is remembering. Okay, so it's right up there, right after hearing and chanting. To remember God, okay, is possible. It's only possible when what? When you've heard about him, right? Okay, so if there's no subject matter to hear about in relation to God, how can we really remember him? Okay. So this in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Janma karma cha me divyam." One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities automatically gets liberation, does not have to take birth again in this material world. So it's so important. And yet people claim to be God conscious and have no information about God. How can you remember God if you don't know anything about him? So we have so much information on this point. I mentioned the other day, I had a long discussion, I have this ongoing dialogue with my friend, the Christian minister, and he's a very nice man. He's very sincere. And he just gets really annoyed when we talk about this subject. are the qualities of God? Well, he'll talk about a bunch of abstractions, but then, okay, well, what does he look like? What does he do? Well, there's just no information about this. We know Jesus, what he looked like, what he did. And so to think of God means to think of Jesus. Well, how is it possible to think of Jesus? Because he was a person. So how about the person who sent Jesus? Well, that is not important. You just have to remember Jesus. What was it Satchinandana Maharaj was saying very nicely yesterday? That he's comparing the disciple to a lotus, and the guru to a pond, and the Lord to the sun. So if a lotus is without sunshine, or without a pond, rather, first of all, it will just dry up, cannot survive. If someone thinks, I can go to God without guru, don't need a guru, don't need to worry about that stuff, then one's devotion dries up. The juice evaporates. On the other hand, if the lotus is sitting in a pond and gets no sunshine, then it rots. He said, like a guru cult. We just have our guru, we don't need anyone else. See? So this is kind of akin to modern Christianity. There's no growth because there's no sunshine. Guru just means connecting the devotee with God. That's all. So my friend is very motivated by increasing his discipleship. He said, I want to really understand what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. Okay? So what did Jesus say? He said, he was asked, what's your first commandment? Love thy Lord thy God with all your heart, mind, and soul. How can you love somebody you don't know? How can you love an idea, an abstraction? How can you love a gas or an energy or some faceless, nameless thing? You see? It's so exasperating to be in the middle of this Kali Yuga with real knowledge. People are so, so ignorant of these points. But at least we should know this, huh? That let us have the information. And we have it in abundance. This book, this one, these verses we chant each morning, Brahma Samhita, I just wanted to show them as an example. This is one book, Brahma Samhita, right, of the vast Vedic literature. And Lord Brahma spoke this book extemporaneously when he saw Krishna. There, I believe, are 100 chapters. I'm not even sure if it's known how many chapters there are. They're all lost except one part of the fifth chapter. And even in the fifth chapter, there's just 40 verses that exist. Lord Chaitanya found this verse when he was touring South India, or found this book in a temple in South India. And he was so happy he had copies made. And this is how we have it today. Again, it's just a tiny fraction of one chapter. So we're chanting these verses every day. Just look at this wealth of information. So Lord Brahma has just seen Krishna, and now he's speaking. Just Venum means what? The flute. Kwanbamtam. A few vocabulary words here. What is Aravinda? Lotus. And Dalaya, Taksha. Taksha. So that means eyes. Eyes, yeah. Aksha, yeah, right. So he's playing the flute. His eyes are like fully blossomed lotus flowers. You know, sometimes you see these oriental eyes, they're just like lotus petals. So his are like that, but in full bloom. Barhavatam samasitam. Sundara. Sundara means beautiful. Angam, his body, his limbs. Kandarpa koti. What is koti? We say ananta koti Vaishnavrinda. Right, so all glories to the unlimited millions of Vaishnavas. That's like a shotgun glorification. Make sure we don't miss anybody. Ananta koti Vaishnav. So Kandarpa means Cupid. Now Cupid's a god of love. You know, when you fall in love, it's like nothing else matters. That's the power of Cupid's arrows. So Cupid, millions of Cupids, are just charmed by the beauty that they are seeing when they see Krishna. So look at these vivid descriptions. All these details are given. That gives the mind something to grasp onto, right? To think about Krishna in so many ways. How about the next verse? Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. So anga again means limbs. And indriya, what are the indriyas? Senses. So his limbs are so amazing that each one can perform the functions of all of his senses. He can smell with his arm. He can taste with his eyes. He can do anything any of his senses do with any part of his body. And this is just one incredible description. Have you ever read anything in fiction that even comes close to that? Imagine the superhero who can do anything with any one of his limbs. You know, I mean, fiction writers can't even make this stuff up. And again, this is just one line. Pashyanti panti kalayanti chiram jagant. Pashyanti means what?
To see.
Panti kalayanti, I don't know which is which, but he sees, manifests, and maintains the jaganti. Which means what? Countless universes. He sees them all. He creates them all. He sees them all. He maintains them all. Again, this is just another line. Generally, the idea of God, at best, is this one big dude who takes care of our universe. You know, he's got a big office, and he's very busy all day taking care of this planet and that karma and this heaven and this hell. You know, but Krishna just sees it all happening. He manifests it all, and it's like he's got no responsibility for any of it. And then this beautiful line, Ananda means bliss, chin, or chit, eternality, sat, truth, yes, sat. Oh, chin is knowledge? Oh, sorry. So bliss, knowledge, and truth. Or eternality, I guess. Anyway, Ujvala means beautiful, brilliant, lustrous, resplendent, and vigraha, form. So his beautiful, resplendent form is full of eternal truth and eternity, truth and knowledge. You see, every line is just packed with details. And these, again, just an insignificant part, two verses out of, no one knows how many thousands of verses like this that Lord Brahma spoke when he saw him. These two were picked because they were kind of rhythmic. They're not even next to each other. They're separated by another verse, right? Alola Chandra Kalasa. He's wearing a moon locket, Valamamsi, and a garland made of forest flowers. And what? Shyamam Tribangam. He's standing in his threefold bending form. All these details are there that allow us to remember Krishna. Just his form. This is just describing his form. Just describing his form. The first verse Lord Brahma speaks, that we have, describes what? Chintamani Prakara Sadmashi. Chintamani, it describes his abode. So when Lord Brahma appears, when Lord Brahma sees Lord Krishna, he first of all sees his beautiful abode. This also happens when he tries to steal the cowherd boys in Vrindavan. He sees the beautiful abode of Vrindavan, and he's impressed with its rural loveliness. There's trees, there's cows, there's green, chintamani, and everything is made of touchstone. Touchstone is that stone that turns regular iron into gold. And everything is built out of this stone, this most precious of all jewels. Chintamani Prakara Sadmashu, Kalpa Vriksha, all the trees are wish-fulfilling trees. You go up to him and say, hey, could I have an apple? Hey, thank you. Could I have a mango? Thank you. Could I have a milkshake? Thank you. You know, whatever you want, anything, they give it to you. And all the trees are like that. Do you think it would be hard to live in such a place? So this is what Lord Brahma is seeing. In this way, we have countless, infinite details about God. And that makes it possible to think about him and fill our minds with the information. Give us something substantial. How can people be religious and make spiritual advancement without this information? You know, it's impossible. They can't think of God and therefore cannot cut the attachment. The whole point is to become so attached to Krishna that we lose our attachments for the fleshy pleasures of this material world. And there's no substitute way to lose those attachments, to cut this knot. And so the binding knot, material existence, is cut by remembering the personality of Godhead. So knowing this, who would not pay attention to hear about Krishna? Again, unfortunately, almost everybody in Gainesville, except all these wonderful souls in this room. So, any comments or questions about this from any of you brilliant scholars and Vaishnavas? Yes. Prabhupada said their sincerity is their God consciousness. Their sincerity is their God consciousness. So they can be very sincere, but they cannot make much advancement. My God brother asked Prabhupada, he was with Prabhupada in India, at Chaitanya Prabhu, at the Kali temple, where they sacrifice goats for Kali. And he asked him, which is better, this goat sacrifice or Christianity? And Prabhupada thought for a moment. He said, the goat sacrifice is better. So it'd be because at least they're following some process, something authorized. So they're gradually making progress. That is to say that the Christian will not gradually make progress. But if their spirituality, theirs or anyone's spirituality, teaches them, oh, Krishna can't be God, then what is the use of it? See? What is the value? I confronted this man the other day. Yes. Yes. Try to understand this point and this question. I thought for a long time how to phrase this properly. So I finally asked this gentleman, what is it about Krishna that makes you think he is not the same God Jesus is talking about? What is it? That's an open-ended question. And he said, just things that I've learned. And I asked him, do you mean things that you've learned about Krishna or things that you've learned from the Bible? And he said, I'll have to think about that. So in other words, he avoided the question. So if you really get down to it with most of the people in this culture, they will have to acknowledge that they don't know anything about God. They believe in Jesus, but they don't know anything about God. And that is very uncomfortable for them. So my point is not to make them uncomfortable or defeat them. It's just, if we want to give them knowledge, if they are sincere, and this is why Prabhupada said their sincerity is their God, if they are sincere to understand God, no matter what, then they'll be able to confront this poor fund of knowledge that they've been given and realize that it's inadequate.